Om Agyanatimirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Dina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Nangayate Garim Yat Kripa Tamaham Vande Shri Gurandina Taranam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namane Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Sanyavari pasta chade satarane. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. First, I should probably explain why Bhaktivedanta Goswami said it's a big sacrifice for me. One may question why is it such a big sacrifice to give a class. I guess you could say, as I've been mentioning many times, it's over the last almost 2 years, I've been giving classes to a screen and a camera, and it's been austerity for me, although I'm certainly continuing to do it. So that, in a sense, has made it a sacrifice. But also, I've described myself as being somewhat non-compliant because for almost 2 years I've been following my own schedule, which is a luxury I've never had in the last 35 years to follow my own schedule, because usually my life is filled with demands of what everybody else wants to schedule me for, and that includes also giving classes. So I've sacrificed the request to give classes, made the sacrifice, and it's not that I'm just doing what I want to do. I don't think I'll ever come to that point, not, at least not in this life, of being able to do just what I want to do, because there are so many things that I have to do. But nonetheless, it was a sacrifice for me to give class today. And especially when I heard that the topic was connected to management, because although I was able to convince my persons who requested me to try to avoid talking about management as much as possible, because I've also divorced myself by circumstance for almost 2 years from getting involved in management. And then I was assured when I expressed my hesitancy that I don't have to speak about management, and I felt a little bit better. That I guess the request is to speak about Srila Prabhupada. And I wrote, just about an hour ago, I wrote a little introduction. I hope you'll allow me to read it. And I would like to read it and to maybe expand on it a little bit while I'm reading it, but I'd like to follow the introduction before I actually begin speaking spontaneously, because I believe it will be a good way to introduce my presentation today. I've given it to my translator, so. As I understand, there is an attempt being made to request Srila Prabhupada's disciples to help some of the Russian leaders who are currently, quote, in training, to better understand Srila Prabhupada's vision for his movement's future. I've been told that you've already heard from many senior disciples who have shared their own experiences with Srila Prabhupada and the realizations they gleaned in their service to him for the past 50 years. Unlike my godbrothers and godsisters who have spoken before me, however, my experiences with Srila Prabhupada were based more on serving his instructions, which were deeply embedded in his followers, in his books, and in his movement during his physical presence. His Vapu was not so accessible to me during the 5 years I served him up until his departure, although I was certainly blessed to be in his physical presence several times. I could say some things about that, but I've chosen to not speak from that viewpoint. I also must apologize due to my own shortcomings. Despite the best efforts of others to help me understand what I'm supposed to be speaking about today, the mandate which has been given to me still remains a little unclear, and I'll explain why. From late 1972, when I first began visiting the temple, to late 1977, when Srila Prabhupada departed, my experience of Srila Prabhupada's presence in his movement was deeply enhanced by Srila Prabhupada's physical presence. For me, Srila Prabhupada's Vani was alive because his living example was always there to back it up. Forgive me for quoting myself, but I believe that experience can be best described by reading part of the introduction to a book on devotee care, which I wrote about 5 or 6 years ago, as follows. Quote, when I moved into the ISKCON Boston Temple 43 years ago, I don't recall ever hearing the term devotee care spoken amongst the devotees. This expression was simply not a part of our daily vernacular. Later that same decade, thinking back once again, I also can't recall a time when this expression might have evolved. An obvious question to ask would then be, why? Didn't the leaders think of devotee care back then? My answer to that would be, the leaders certainly did, but they just didn't talk so much about it as a system within ISKCON. They simply did it as best as they knew how, and those strong enough to continue also simply accepted that given the time, the place, and the circumstance, a, quote, best effort that caring from the leaders was enough to continue to serve Srila Prabhupada's mission. Our movement has definitely changed since then. If asked again, why? To give a complete answer is beyond the scope of this short introduction. Suffice it to say, however, over the years, this expression, quote, devotee care, has not only evolved as a topic discussed, and discussed often, by various leaders worldwide, but as a system aimed at safeguarding the future of ISKCON. In other words, simply put, if ISKCON is to survive as a voluntary spiritual movement, devotees now, more than ever before, will need to feel cared for. Whenever I'm asked to speak on this topic, I'll usually begin by saying that devotee care, first and foremost, begins with protecting devotees' faith in the purity of devotional service. In those early years, our faith in the purity of devotional service was strong because Srila Prabhupada's presence, example, and purity was so palpable throughout the whole movement. In fact, Srila Prabhupada's purity was probably one of the most often discussed topics amongst those who served him. Moreover, no one ever questioned Srila Prabhupada's purity. At least for me, faith in Srila Prabhupada's purity and the opportunity to serve him was the most vital part in feeling cared for. I'm sure others felt the same way. That palpable presence of Srila Prabhupada's purity within ISKCON is not as strong as it was when he was physically with us. No doubt, that is one of the reasons why our movement has changed over the four decades which have since passed. That presence cannot be recreated artificially, neither should we expect it to be. But that does not preclude the need to assure devotees that they are wanted, needed, and are vital members of a spiritually vibrant community of devotees dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and pure mission His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada left for all His sincere followers. That's the end of my quote from 6 years ago. Now just a couple of more short paragraphs I wrote today. In other words, I was lifted and carried in my devotional service during those years, not as much by Vapu as I was by Srila Prabhupada's Vani. Given the circumstances under which I served from 1972 to 1977, all things considered, my Krishna consciousness was nourished much in the same way as everyone else's Krishna consciousness should be nourished in their service to Srila Prabhupada's Vani in 2021. His books are still present. His followers are still present, although a lot more are leaving as years go by. And his movement is still present. My realization, therefore, is to the degree we keep Srila Prabhupada's example fresh and alive within his movement, to that degree we all can continue to be lifted and carried in our onward journey to Goloka Vrindavan. That's my short introduction. Why did I say that it wasn't so clear what my mandate was today? Because I don't consider that my experiences from 1972 and 1977 are that much different than what everybody else's experiences should be today. I was nourished, lifted, maintained, inspired, enlivened, and willing to sacrifice so much because Srila Prabhupada's Vani was alive. It wasn't just an instruction that was forced down my throat. Not only was his Vani alive, but his example was alive. And his example was, although his instructions were so accessible everywhere, his example always highlighted his compassionate method of delivering those instructions. That probably more than anything else kept devotees alive, sacrificing, nourished, inspired, and willing to do anything that Srila Prabhupada would ask Because he was so perfect. And how he gave those instructions. In fact, I could speak more on this, and I probably will. But one of the, when I first received my request to speak, I said, why don't you have the devotees read the letter to Atreya Rishi that Prabhupada wrote about envy, and about utopia, and how that anybody who thinks that in our movement there should be utopia, they are impersonalists, because there is no utopia. And Prabhupada made the point that as long as we're in the material world, because we are persons, individually, we are unique, there will always be some fault. And then Prabhupada talked about the faults of the spiritual world. He said, even in the spiritual world, there's fault. He said, Krishna, when he was, upon observing or seeing Radharani, he became so overwhelmed that he began milking a bull instead of a cow. And then he gave the example of the gopis. When they were dressing for Krishna, some of them put their bottoms on their top, some of them put their top on the bottom, some of them put their kajal on one eye, and their ornaments in different places. The ornaments that were supposed to be put on their arms were put on their legs, and the ornaments that were put on the legs were put on their arms. To look at the gopis, they were definitely, there was some fault in their readiness for their appearance to see Krishna. But Prabhupada's point was, because it was for Krishna, it was perfect. And he said that there's always some fault in the spiritual world, and there's even some envy in the spiritual world. But in the spiritual world, there's never any malice. Why? Because everything is for Krishna. And Prabhupada used that example to illustrate that our devotees in our Krishna consciousness movement, they are greater than the greatest kings. Why are they greater than the greatest kings? Because they've given everything. They've given their wealth, they've given their position, they've given their status, they've given everything that they had for Krishna. And although they may have some fault, because they've given it to Krishna, everything, their faults should be overlooked. And when I think of that letter, I think about that quote that Prabhupada wrote, and I oftentimes do quote it because it's one of my favorite quotes that Prabhupada gave in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And where he talks about freedom from envy. And really that's the essence of Prabhupada's example. Because a person who's free from envy, he can think of others' welfare. And because Prabhupada was so perfect in his distribution of his instructions, he was always thinking about the recipient of those instructions. What one instruction he may give to one devotee may not necessarily be the same instruction he would give to another devotee. Yet today we have this somehow this inherent need to cherry-pick Prabhupada's instructions and ram them down people's throat and call it compassion. But Prabhupada wasn't like that. When he gave his instructions, he wasn't like that. If you hear devotees speak about Srila Prabhupada, repeatedly, those who did have his physical presence, those who did have his vapu, who watched him, who observed him in his dealings, those who watched him closely, logged their memories of everything they saw, everything they witnessed. They saw a Prabhupada who was free from envy. And because he was free from envy, he knew where to deliver and where not to deliver. He was uncompromising. Many times he was very uncompromising. But because his example was always there and alive to back it up, it kept us going. His instructions were alive, not just quoted. I was kept alive for 5 years and nourished by devotees who were delivering the same thing Prabhupada's disciples are delivering today. Same thing. I would be encouraged, but because they were alive. Prabhupada was present and they were alive, and we felt that Prabhupada was personally asking me to do this. And at least many devotees thought that way, although certainly some devotees contested some of the instructions, and there was some back and forth conflicts, and Prabhupada had to deal with conflicts a lot. But his whole letter that I ask that you please read today was, don't think that this Krishna consciousness movement is going to be utopia. And if it's not utopia, then maybe it's because we're impersonalists. Prabhupada said, no, on the contrary, those who think it should be utopia, they're impersonalists, because they're not accepting that we're all people. And because we're all people, we all have our baggage. We all have our minor faults, Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, how a devotee should always be overlooking the minor faults of others, not amplifying them, but overlooking them. He said, not only overlooking the minor faults, but overlooking the minor offenses of others. He speaks about that in the Bhagavad Gita in one commentary. And he speaks about, in this verse from the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the verse I quote a lot, Svastyastu Vishvasya Kala Prasidatam Jayantu Bhutani Shivam Mitodhiya Manascha Bhadram Bhajatad Hoksaje Aveshitam No Matir Apyahaituki. May there be good fortune throughout the universe, and may all envious persons be pacified. May all living entities become calm by practicing bhakti yoga. For by accepting devotional service, they will think of each other's welfare. Therefore, let us all engage in the service of the Supreme Transcendence, Lord Sri Krishna, and always remain absorbed in thought of him. And Prabhupada says in the purport, I'm going to skip over to one part where he speaks to this point that I wanted to make. Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Dharma are meant for persons who are completely free of envy. Parama Nyamartsaranam. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj prays in this verse, Kala Prasidatam. May all the envious persons be pacified. The material world is full of envious persons. But if one frees himself of envy, he becomes liberal in his social dealings and can think of others' welfare. I always explain that my understanding of this, he can be liberal with others. Why? Because he's strict with himself. And because he's strict with himself, that carries more weight, even more weight, than how he deals with others, instructs others. Why? That's what it means. Prabhupada's instructions were alive. Because we always had that example. We always talked about it. I mean, I remember going back to the temple after Sankirtan in the evening, and the devotees would be talking about where Prabhupada was. Devotees would be writing things about what he said in class that day. And other devotees would be sharing things that Prabhupada did, his dealings. We were kept alive. Alive. Not just physically alive, spiritually alive by his example. And therefore I said, as I said, that I question what it is that I had different then that devotees don't have now, or at least could have now, if we keep Prabhupada alive. If we don't, then there's a lot to be missed. His purity, his example, his compassion, his love, his dedication to his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I listened to a lecture on Bhaktisiddhanta's disappearance day. Yesterday, day before yesterday. And Prabhupada, as I was listening to it, it was just so personal. He was talking about his whole meeting with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his meeting with the Gaudiya Math devotees, his desire to do something to serve his mission. He talked about the difficulties he had to endure when he first began the Krishna consciousness movement in India, difficulties he had to endure. As I was listening, Prabhupada was speaking continuously in this talk for about, oh, maybe, I don't know, 45 minutes. And as I, when I finished hearing this talk, I was immediately thinking, I want to share this. This is another talk. I already shared a talk 2 days ago. This is another talk I heard on the same day, 2 days ago. This was this talk. And I was thinking, I wanted to share this talk, and I wanted to call it, if you want to hear, if you want to love Srila Prabhupada more, then listen to this. Because as I was listening to it, my heart was dancing with Prabhupada's simplicity, his purity, his sacrifices, his honesty. Everything about him was just so simple and pure that it was captivating. And I'm finding more and more, this is another thing I wanted to share with you. This is another thing, at least I wanted to share. My realizations, my experiences. Many of you might know, I've been reading Brihad Bhagavatamrita and giving classes on it for a year and a half. And Prabhupada didn't give us Brihad Bhagavatamrita. He didn't translate it. He wanted it translated, but he didn't give it to us. But I've been focused on it, reading it, becoming very much, even every time I'm giving a class on it, it's for me, it's like ever fresh. And when I go back and I listen to Srila Prabhupada's lectures, his lectures are even more alive. More alive. They're always alive, but they're even more alive. Because I hear that Prabhupada was talking about everything I'm reading about and becoming alive about now. It's there. It's the same thing that Srila Gaur Govinda Maharaj once shared with me in my conversation with him in 1993, or 1992, I can't remember what year it was. And he was holding up Chaitanya Charitamrita and he was telling me, Maharaj, it's all here. We have to dive deep, not on the surface. It's all here. Just look. And then he was speaking and he was just bringing out the jewels, showing me. Show me I was blind. I was just swimming on the surface. But he was diving deep below the surface and showing me that the very words Prabhupada was speaking, the very translations he was giving, they're there. They're there. And my gratitude to Prabhupada for giving everything. He didn't hold back. Forgiving everything just increases manyfold times. He gave everything. And if we keep Prabhupada present in his instructions, we'll experience and realize the sacrifices required to see how Prabhupada gave us everything. If we don't sacrifice, if we just simply stay on the surface and don't make the sacrifices that Prabhupada actually forced by his purity in us. He forced us to sacrifice, not because he was heavy, throwing thunderbolts. We were mad. Because of his example, we were mad to serve him because of his example. And his instructions were just impregnated with compassion and love and everything required by his example. Without his example, they're just instructions if we're not careful. But if we remember who delivered them, they're Prabhupada. They're Prabhupada who gave everything. Not only everything, he gave himself completely in service to his followers, in service to his Guru Maharaj. All the sacrifices required to realize the fruit of his instructions are all available to the degree that we try to keep Prabhupada's instructions alive in our Krishna consciousness movement. And as I said, keeping them alive is not just repeating them as a way to convince people to surrender. Keeping them alive means presenting them as Prabhupada presented them. I was just recently reading one devotee, Vishabhanu, he's reading Prabhupada Lilamrita. He asked Prabhupada disciples to read different sections of Prabhupada Lilamrita to share with all the devotees around the world, and he puts them online. He asked me if I would read something. So I said, sure. She said, it's only 10 minutes. So he picked a 10-minute segment from Prabhupada Lilamrita and he gave it to me, and I read it. And in that 10-minute segment was a story about one man that Prabhupada was visiting him. And this man, I can't remember his name, he was a government worker. And he would invite many people to his home and conduct programs and invite Prabhupada to come and speak. And there was really, as the man was saying, there was a very wide spectrum of people there from all different backgrounds. But he was inviting Prabhupada to come and speak, and Prabhupada, of course, was the life of the gathering, so to speak. And he was describing how some people just, they weren't ready for what Prabhupada was saying. And he said Prabhupada was always very perfect in his presentation. He said he would give everyone just what they needed. He said one person, he got just what he needed. Another person says the internet connection is unstable. Can you still hear me? Can you shake your head? Yes?
Okay. Yes, Maharaj, we can still hear you.
Okay. The other person...
Very short break, but otherwise it's... Okay.
And he said the other person got just what he needed. And others, he said, they just... he was amazed how Prabhupada gave a talk, and he knew the mentality of everybody who was there. And everybody was fully enlivened, inspired, and heard just what they needed to hear from Prabhupada. And he was, this is what I was reading from Prabhupada Lilamrita. And then Prabhupada, he said that Prabhupada couldn't continue the programs, and that he would, he asked this man to please continue them. And the man said his whole nourishment, his whole strength, everything he had was based on Prabhupada's presence. And when Prabhupada stopped coming, he lost his momentum and couldn't keep it up. But another perfect example of Prabhupada's living presence. Unfortunately, he was not able to keep Prabhupada alive. And therefore, he was not able to continue the programs. But the point, again, perfect in how he distributes the absolute truth and knows who to give, knows when to be as hard as a thunderbolt, and knows when to be as soft as a rose. He knows the heart. And therefore, simply to repeat Prabhupada's instructions may not necessarily always be like a parrot. Although Prabhupada said we should repeat, there's some value to repeating, but we should know how to present it in a way that others can take it. Can take it, become inspired by it, and feel Srila Prabhupada's presence. That is still here in our movement today for the devotees who do keep him alive. And therefore, I said it was a little difficult for me to speak because I didn't have so much vapu. I was nourished from 1972 to 1977 in the same way that all of you should be nourished in 2021 from the lips of the devotees who keep Prabhupada alive. And you can keep him alive too by your desire to hear about him. That will keep him alive also. He will be present to the degree that we invite him. Krishna says, Naham tishtami vaikute yoginam fidiye shuva. He says, I'm not in the Vaikuntha planets, I'm not in the hearts of yogis, but wherever devotees are discussing my glories, I'm there. I go. To the degree we invite Prabhupada, we can get the same experience that the devotees had. And I would say, at least I had an advantage. My advantage was, at least I can say, I was there. But that's about it. I was there. I witnessed it. I was nourished by it. I made the sacrifices from it. I relished it. And I try not to be old and hackneyed in my way of relishing the same topics we discussed then in the way we discuss them now. They're just as relishable. What were they? As I had written in my introduction, and I'll end with that short paragraph in my introduction. that, excuse me. Yes, here it is. I wrote, in those early years, our faith in the purity of devotional service was strong because Srila Prabhupada's presence, example, and purity was so palpable throughout the whole movement. In fact, Srila Prabhupada's purity was probably one of the most often discussed topics amongst those who served him. Moreover, no one ever questioned Srila Prabhupada's purity. At least for me, faith in Srila Prabhupada's purity and the opportunity to serve him was the most vital part in feeling cared for. I'm sure others felt the same way. This is how we felt cared for. This is the best way to feel cared for. Yes, it's one thing to feel cared for the physical body, for emotional needs, economic needs. Yes, but the best way to feel cared for, best way to feel cared for, is to feel inspired that pure devotional service is alive. It exists. And Prabhupada came to give it, and he still wants it to be given. Nothing less. Nothing less. That's his movement, the purpose of establishing his movement. It's his mission, and it's his intention that for those who have faith in it, they'll go to the other side where he's waiting. He's left the boat here, his movement, and on the other side, of the he's waiting for those to take the same boat he crossed. That's his mission. That's my realization, which I'm attempting to share. And I don't know if I captured the essence of what I'm supposed to speak about today. As I said in the beginning, I was a little blindsided. I didn't know what I had to offer because I didn't really have so much physical association with Prabhupada. As you probably heard from so many devotees who spoke before me, I'm sure they shared so much of what they saw, what they experienced, what they heard, everything. I'm sure that they had so much to give. I can only give what's still available today. And if anybody's interested in keeping it alive, and as a result of what I tried to give, then I will consider my efforts of some value to the humble request that has been made of to me to participate in this event today. So that's it. I'm going to end here. As I said, I'm a free agent. I'm a non-compliant speaker, and I don't generally keep schedules. If you have some questions, I'll leave some time, but I'm not going to speak. I was told that it's for an hour and a half. I'm finished. I said what I feel like I needed to say. And if you have questions, I'll try to answer them to the best of my ability. Hare Krishna. And I was told only persons who can ask questions are those who are part of this Prabhupada Sandarbha Assembly. Am I correct? Yes, okay.
That one Mohan should answer. I don't know what is the protocol here.
He told me, that's what he told me.
Okay.
Yes, Maharaj.
I'll probably start. Gaur Krishna also has a question. Maybe he should start. I'll ask after him.
Are you gonna give a stump the Swami question? Okay, go.
Huh? Let Gaur Krishna first ask his question.
Okay, Gaur Krishna.
But just for information, Maharaj, devotees have discussed the letter that you requested them to read, and they, many of them, discussed it in their small groups that we have in the Bhaktivedanta University, and they came up with various questions, relevant questions for that letter. So just so you know that we do have some questions besides the ones being asked by devotees who raise their hands.
Okay. All right. Gaur Krishna. Hare Krishna.
You're muted.
Microphone.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you for your sharing your experience. And I, for my personally, you are exactly touched the point which we expect from this course about Prabhupada experience, etc. And if you don't mind, I'm asking you my question in Russian because it's more comfortable for me and somebody will translate.
Yes.
Нам вот преданным, которые будут продолжать движение, единственная возможность общаться с Прабхупадой – это Вани. А во времена Шрилы Прабхупады это было Вани и Вапу. Мадхамахарджи, мы будем переводить прям.
Я понял.
Я перевожу здесь. Я могу переводить, просто я жду, когда закончится логическая часть. Сейчас переведу по предложению или как Гаур Кришна Прабху?
Как, лучше логически заверши.
Ага. Да, просто остановите меня, когда это.
Ну хорошо, вы хотите переводить? Я буду очень рад.
Не-не, переведи.
Вот. И вот нам важно продолжать традицию Вани. И вот мой вопрос. Вот. Уже тогда, во время присутствия Шрилы Прабхупады, традиция Вани, не личного общения, а именно вот этого пропитывания, она уже существовала, вот вы сами это сказали. И вот эта наиболее важная часть, как она работала в то время, когда вот были уже ученики, которые именно больше общались через Вани. Как нам, вот что там было особенного, что она вот сохранялась, развивалась и дает до сих пор вот пищу для... тех преданных уже прошло столько лет, и она вот все еще питает. И вот что-то есть, ну, как говорят, какой секрет есть такой, да, вот, ну, какая-то вот изюминка, гухья мутта мама, я не знаю, или как вот сказать, да, или, знаю, вот, какова была культура Вани тогда, как она ее сохранить? Потому что сейчас тоже люди говорят, вот, книги Прабхупады, разные мнения, они спорят, они доказывают, там, ну, вот, в то времена вот это она уже была, вот как она работала в то время, что было вот особенного, что нам нужно обязательно сохранить сейчас, потому что это только возможность нам иметь контакт.
Гаур Кришна Прабху's question is that back then during Prabhupada's physical presence, you his disciples had both Vani and Vapu. You were able to associate with Prabhupada physically as well as by his instructions. Now of course we do have Vani, we have Prabhupada's books, we have his lectures and everything, but there was something significantly different back then in the culture of Vani that you followed during Prabhupada's physical presence. And because of that, special, very mature culture of Vani, of Srila Prabhupada's personal, of Prabhupada's instructions, because of that, Gaura Krishna Prabhu, the movement developed despite the lack of Prabhupada's physical presence in the lives of his disciples. So his question is, what is that specialty, the special secret that you had back then in terms of Prabhupada's Vani, not Vapu, that we should glean from your example and preserve and also put to practice now? What we should learn in terms from you in terms of how to cling to Prabhupada's Vani or instructions?
I kind of alluded to that, although maybe I didn't elaborate enough, that... faith and pure devotional service is what was the ingredient that brought his Vani alive. Although you say Vapu was there, my point was that I saw Prabhupada in New York twice, maybe three times, I can't remember. saw him in Mayapur. I saw him in Philadelphia. I saw him in Vrindavan, briefly. Never exchanged. I saw him. But what I saw was imbibed deeply because it perfectly matched what I heard. Perfectly matched. There was no blockages whatsoever. What I saw in his example, just the way he held himself, his regal appearance, his eyes, I mean, even his one glance that I somehow once caught, once by some divine intervention, it was enough to carry me who knows how many lifetimes. So what I saw, there was no blockage of what I saw, but more, what I heard from those who served him. And that my point was that they're still present. And they still can share. And anybody who awakens faith in pure devotional service is giving the ingredient necessary. Because that's what Prabhupada lived for. That's the ingredient necessary. If that ingredient is preserved, whosever mouth it comes from, whosever mouth, doesn't make difference if it's from Prabhupada's book or it's from Prabhupada's lecture that we hear, from whosoever mouth it comes from, the faith and purity of devotional service that Prabhupada came to give will keep Prabhupada's example, his vani, alive. That's the necessary ingredient. That's it. Nothing else. That's the necessary ingredient. And therefore, Prabhupada wanted us to have that faith, and he gave it to us. He would say, all my disciples are pure devotees. He would make so many statements. And he would make the statement like he said in the letter. They've given up everything. They're better than kings. That's what Prabhupada saw in us. Even though maybe due to some offenses or maybe due to other reasons which are beyond the scope of this discussion right now, devotees may have given up their practices, but Prabhupada always emphasized that even if a devotee falls down from his position, he doesn't lose anything. Why? Because he began with faith in pure devotional service. Maybe he lost it for some reason, but he began with faith in pure devotional service because Prabhupada never gave anything else. Read Bhagavad Gita, every page, nothing else. Bhagavatam, every page, nothing else. From beginning to middle to the end, nothing else. So anyone who preserves faith and pure devotional service is giving the necessary ingredient to keep Prabhupada's vani alive. Is that answer your question?
Yes, thank you, Maharaj. I take it as my legacy for the next generation, what you say. Thank you. This is the secret ingredient. Thank you very much.
I'm trying to formulate my question or other doubt, which I have, if I'm allowed to do it. When you said about the faith in devotional service, pure devotional service, Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks about this in Jaiva Dharma. He says that the face of Sharanagati, because according to his explanation, face and Sharanagati is more or less the same thing, Sharanapati Lakshanam. Face, and he also explains that the Sharanagati, it's an emotional state. There is an emotional, strong emotional component in the word face. And in this condition, which we call face of Shraddha. And when you said that Prabhupada's personal presence was, even though it was not, I mean, so prominent in your particular life, still, it was enough to strengthen and enforce this emotional element which we call faith. At the same time, when we just read books and have purely intellectual understanding of what is being said, and this emotional component may be lacking to a certain extent. And therefore, you know, people, they read books and they start arguing this point at that point, and you know, they're more or less missing the forest behind the trees. You know, there's, you know, when you have this overwhelming emotion, you know, you are not going to argue about nitty-gritty details or trying to find some contradictions. But when it's not there, then all this kind of intellectualization, or, you know, all this kind of mental understanding of what of Prabhupada's teaching comes. So my question or my doubt is that, you know, when you speak, you definitely very strongly represent this emotional part. You more or less expressing and trying to transmit your own emotion, which is a foundation of Krishna consciousness. But with the course of time, this emotional component will be waning inevitably. You know, I know myself, I listen to somebody or I read a book from Prabhupada follower, and it has strong emotional impact, but maybe not as strong as it has on you, who has seen Srila Prabhupada. So what will happen in the next generation when this emotional component will be waning? And yeah, so basically that's my concern or doubt. I don't know if I expressed myself clear enough.
I think I understand the point you're making. Let me try it, and if it's not, if I didn't hit it, then we can dialogue. I understand the point you make from Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Jivadharma, and especially the point about emotion. And I understand especially the point about the potential waning of that emotion to fall victim of academically approaching the teachings of Shuddha Bhakti. And what to speak of academically approaching it, academically applying it, and or academically imposing it. All those factors can definitely lead to a waning of the emotion that's necessary to keep faith in pure bhakti alive. And that's why I kind of said that when, in answer to Gaur Krishna's question, that the necessary component that we should all aspire for And we should never think we have, which I oftentimes even refer to by quoting the verse from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, which states that pure devotional service is so transcendentally potent that simply by hearing about it, simply by glorifying it in response, simply by meditating on it, simply by faithfully and respectfully accepting that it exists, although I may not have it, but I have faith that it exists, and simply by speaking about others who I perceive are trying to teach that to me, then a person who is even envious of all the demigods and all living entities in the universe can become purified. So I accept that verse as very powerful evidence that even though I have faith that it exists, and I definitely have faith that it's real, and because I have faith that it exists, I'm inclined to repeat when I hear something about it, even out of passion, not realization. I'm passionate. and with some emotions, and I'm inclined to hear about it. Because why? Because it's my ticket for purification. It's the ingredient that I have faith that it exists. It's a necessary ingredient. And even though we may not fully manifest it, and we may not manifest the ecstatic symptoms or the emotions which we expect to find in somebody who's experiencing bhava, and even though the potential for a waning of those emotions may...
There was a break.
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah. Again, your internet connection is unstable. Is it back again?
Yeah, you're back.
I'm back, okay.
Now you're back.
But that's what Shraddha is. It's the word Jiva Goswami gives in Bhakti Tattva Viveka. I forget the word that he gives in relationship to Shraddha. But he says that it's the primary element required for the seed of bhakti to take root and to nourish and to grow. And although it may not be fully manifest, still, those who speak about it, hear about it, meditate on it, and faithfully accept that it exists and glorify it wherever they may see it, they have their hope that those genuine emotions which we will keep those instructions alive will in due course of time manifest. What else do we have? And of course, as Prabhupada would always quote the verse, that pure devotional service cannot be had by millions of births of pious activities. Pure devotional service can only be obtained by those who are greedy to obtain it, and wherever he sees it, then he should immediately purchase it without delay. We should always keep that as our motto, to keep that faith alive also, because it's our aspiration that every devotee should keep above his head to aspire for, I would say that's how I understand how we can avoid becoming too academic and
too
risk
mental.
Huh?
Too mental about
mental. Yes, too mental. Yes. You know, one of the strongest mental attitudes about devotional service is fear. Devotees have this fear of not being forgiven. And have this fear of mistakes made. And I was just, you know, I was just today, I don't know why, I was looking up, I can't remember why I was looking up, in Prabhupada's letters, his talks, and most of these letters and his talks about, I was looking up the word forgiveness. You look it up. And Prabhupada repeats forgiveness numerous times. He states Krishna is forgiving. He says about himself as being forgiving also. But numerous times he cites Krishna is forgiving. More forgiving than you can imagine. And devotees, they get caught up in this fear. That can be stifling. It can be stifling. It's the fear that, because, why is that fear? Because we forget that Krishna is a person. And what is his most magnanimous qualities? This is his forgiveness. And what to speak of, the embodiment of his most compassionate nature is none other than Srimati Radharani, who manifested in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who came to give this pure devotional service freely. And our qualification is to be most fallen. And
we mastered this qualification.
I don't know if I really hit the point. I tried to, you know, I didn't try to skirt around it, but I tried to address the point of how to not let the emotion die. As that's.
No. I did receive an answer. Actually, what I realized while I was listening to you is that we do have plenty of examples around us, if we look around us impartially, that the pure devotional service exists, you know, and this, you said this is the most important ingredient, you know, and it's emotionally very refreshing and reinforcing to see how different devotees, you know, I was not fortunate enough to see Prabhupada personally, but nevertheless, I cannot complain that I don't see the examples of people who are practicing pure devotional service or have very strong faith in the practice of pure devotional service. And that should be enough to keep my faith alive. So I don't have the reason to doubt it, and I think in the future generation there will always be some examples of people who carry this spirit of pure devotional service in them and reinforcing the faith.
I 100% agree. 100%. I'm convinced that Prabhupada's still watching, and he's not going to abandon us.
Thank you. The time is over.
Huh?
My time is over. Somebody else should ask the question.
Uh-huh. Oh, was that what that darkness which shrouded your presence indicates? So, oh my God, what a way to
introduce. I was just delighted.
But that's an offense to shroud Bhaktivedanta Maharaj's presence, because that's just the type of presence I was speaking about. Somebody who's eager to discuss the topics of pure devotional service. So his presence should not be shrouded in any way by darkness. It should be illuminated by light.
This is what it is. Okay.
They say that even Krishna is shrouded by two types of darkness in Vrindavan, by the dust of cows and by the darkness of the night.
Uh-huh.
It's probably one of the two. Shall I ask Maharaj, devotees, to ask the questions?
Which questions? Their hands up. The hands up questions?
Yes.
Are the...
Yes.
Okay,
yes. Whichever you prefer.
You pick.
Бхактивиганна Махарадж, как вы решите, нам преданных просить тех, кто подняли руки, или тех, кто подготовили ответы, вопросы заранее по письму?
I think it would be more relevant to ask those who have their hands on. I don't know. I didn't see the questions which people prepared, but it's kind of natural to ask those who are already here.
Зира Госвами Прабху, ваш вопрос. Да, Хари Кришна. Мадхамахан Прабху, слышно, да, меня?
Да.
Ага. Хари Кришна, дорогой Махарадж, спасибо большое. У меня такой вопрос по письму как раз. Преданные, когда, скажем так, осваиваются в преданном служении, у них появляется потребность в создании какого-то своего проекта в преданном служении. И если какое-то время назад эти проекты старались создать уникальный конвейер по подготовке вайшнава и потом его интегрировать в общий социум, то в последнее время стала проявляться такая тенденция, где проекты пытаются создать экосистему, за которую преданному вообще не надо выходить. То есть вот у нас тут все вообще мы для тебя создаем, тебе никуда не нужно учиться, тебе никуда не нужно жениться, вот все у нас здесь. Вопрос как раз... Это читая письмо, вот у меня такой вопрос возник. Является ли эта тенденция своего рода прообразом к движению к той самой утопии, о которой Шрила Прабхупада говорил, где я вижу недостатки в другом проекте, я создаю что-то свое, что-то хорошее. Либо это просто естественное эволюционное движение в развитии нашего социума, когда ну, как бы замыкаются какие-то проекты, создавая полный круг от рождения в духовной жизни до ухода в духовный мир внутри отдельных ситуаций.
So Jiva Goswami Prabhu's question is about the fact that when devotees get somewhat developed in devotional service, they tend to start up their own projects.
Get undeveloped? Is that what you said?
No, they get developed, in somewhat established or developed in their devotional service. They tend to start up their own projects. And these projects used to be the kind of projects that would raise devotees, bring them up, educate them, and then plug them into a larger ISKCON. In other words, they would be projects for preparing devotees for their mission in ISKCON at large. But lately, devotees started developing different kinds of projects, projects that are closed on themselves, kind of self-contained, and ecosystems that would discourage devotees from go outside the boundaries of that particular project or community or some program, and devotees would educate themselves there, they would marry within that community confines or something like that. So his question is, if it's a natural development that devotees start creating these kind of self-contained projects centered around certain personalities or ideas. Is it a natural development for the betterment of ISKCON, or maybe this is the kind of attempt to create utopia that you asked us to read about in Prabhupada's letter, to try and create an artificial ideal ISKCON because they're discouraged by the shortcomings of the society around them? This is the question.
I'm not going to get too deep into this. I hope that the questioner will forgive me for... I mean, I'm not going to skirt around it, but I'm just not going to get too deep into it, because if I do, it will take up the rest of our time if I'm to end in 10 minutes. I would say it's natural for it to happen if we forget Srila Prabhupada. Yes, naturally. If we forget what Srila Prabhupada instructions that he gave for the for his mission, his movement, how he wanted it to function, certainly 40-something years after his departure, he was thinking a lot longer than that. The danger is when somebody tries to become an institution unto themselves, and that's the danger that Srila Prabhupada always warned, which was the breakup of the Gaudiya Math. And he gave so much of his blood, his preaching, and instructions, warnings to us. We heard it enough during his physical presence to know that any effort to become an institution unto ourselves is disruptive to what Prabhupada's vision was for the continuation of ISKCON. And it was a very good point that Jiva Goswami made, that because the tendency to do that is because of the faults that are inevitable within ISKCON, which Prabhupada recognized even during his manifest presence. He didn't sweep them under the rug. He addressed them, dealt with them, and he understood. I mean, I was personally witness to many of them during Prabhupada's presence. There's no need for me to describe them. I was personally witness to how Prabhupada dealt with it. There's no need to describe. I don't need to discuss the individuals involved. I was personally affected by it, and Prabhupada dealt with it. No need to discuss it. So the faults were there. And the point that he brought up is that when we can become too much focused on the faults and we think, let me do something better, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks about that in the Sri Bhakti Loka, when he talks about the most essential ingredients for following disciplic succession is absolute faith in the chanting and the holy name of the Lord, firm determination in the execution of chanting of the holy name of the Lord, and compassion. Compassion means spiritual compassion. These are the three most essential ingredients, most essential ingredients for carrying on the disciplic succession. He says when somebody tries to introduce something new, then he promenades on a new path and he drags everyone down with him because they don't want to accept the old path, because the old path seems very difficult to follow. But it's not difficult because we have the examples already in our predecessor acharyas who are teaching us, and he cites Haridas Thakur as our predecessor acharya. Compassion, as he felt towards the guards, his determination to give up the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, both in his determination and to always chant the holy name of the Lord. He describes these three as the criteria. So it's very difficult for some to stay on that path, and they try to create a new path, which seems to be how to become more happy in this world. And I just read something the other day, very interesting quote. I'll read it. I'll quote it. It'll take me just a second, if you will allow me a few seconds to find it. Something that Prabhupada said about how The spiritual master is not interested in this world. He's only and he was specifically speaking. Where did I put it? Where did I put it so I could find it? Hare Krishna. Anyways, I'll try to paraphrase it. Prabhupada was speaking in his class. He talked about many of the previous acharyas. They always taught. He gave Lord Buddha as an example, Shankaracharya's example, and he gave others as an example, that they always taught that they have no interest in this world. They were only interested in the other world. Lord Chaitanya also was given as an example. And Prabhupada said similarly that we are not, and he said, we are not so much interested in the topics of this world. He said the bona fide spiritual master, he's only interested in questions which relate to the spiritual world. He called it the other world. Prabhupada called it the other world. He considered that to be the most important questions which he should be dealing with. So when I read this, I really got a sense that what Prabhupada was saying, which is the same thing that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying in that section of Sri Bhakti Aloka, that everybody's trying to look for the perfect solution in this world, you know, but yet the perfect solution is surrender. The perfect solution is firm faith and chanting, compassion, spiritual compassion for others, and determination to never give up the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. And those who teach that, that's the best path to follow. And that's how Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains it. So when that, there's a certain danger to try to create an institution unto oneself, and Prabhupada warned us about the dangers of becoming institutions unto oneself, and therefore he asked us to work cooperatively in a spiritual work of cooperation. And I'm already speaking more than I intended to speak. I said I wasn't going to speak too long on it, but I think I've already made the point. There's a certain danger of it, and I don't think that it's ill. In most cases, I think where it probably seems to be manifesting, it's not ill-intentioned. It's just a certain attentiveness has to be there to walk that fine line to not lose sight. And I believe in most cases you'll find that the persons who are doing it haven't lost sight, but sometimes the neophyte followers look at the example and they take that as the mission. And it's not. The mission Prabhupada clearly gave, the mission. Bhaktivinoda Thakur clearly gave. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta clearly gave. It's the other world. It's not creating perfect institutions of how to become perfectly happy in this world. Prabhupada said very clearly in that letter, it doesn't exist. And those who try to make it exist, they are the utopians and they are the impersonalists.
Thank you, Maharaj. We do have some more questions, and devotees wrote them up in chat, so it will take less time for them to be asked. One question is from Yugavatara Prabhu. He says, well, how to differentiate, to tell the difference between aspiring for perfection and self-idealization? How to see these tendencies in oneself?
Self-idealization means that we haven't taken sufficient inventory on our hearts. And because we haven't taken sufficient inventory on our hearts, we are trying to aspire or to for that which we're still not ready to achieve. And therefore, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says progress means a series of steps in the right direction. And therefore, we should know where we are and where we need to go. And ultimately, we should have faith in the goal. That we should never lose sight of. And it's remarkably, a lot of this is revealed in Gopakumar's journey. And in the different places that he went, and how he became, let's put it this way, he saw the need, or he felt inadequate in the services that were given to him in each place that he visited, even though the Lord was present and he had the opportunity for service, because he had something in his heart that he was meditating on from his mantra, and he had an experience that he was getting from the chanting of his mantra, which kind of showed a different reality than that which he was experiencing in every place he visited. And that's brought out in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And that's why his journey is so revealing. It's so revealing. Because it shows the path that, you know, if we really want to achieve, you know, the topmost goal, we at least should know what it is. But we should not try to jump there without the proper qualification. We should not be idealist.
Sorry for interjecting.
Okay.
May I ask another question? A question from Alachandra Prabhu from Vladivostok. He says, how do we understand the statement that we should not take discourse between devotees too seriously? Does that apply to the person, to a devotee, who looks at these discourses from the outside, or to those who are involved in them?
Well, Prabhupada, when he speaks about it, he's speaking about the devotees who are internally experiencing it and subjected to it. And therefore, he's saying we should not take it so seriously on those terms. And that's why he always says that a devotee is always forgiving. Is another quote I'd like to read. I have it, if I can find it very quickly. It's short, but Prabhupada's talking about the forgiving nature of a devotee. And it was in one letter. And he said, he's talking about liberality and forgiveness and encouraging people to come in to Krishna consciousness, to live in the temple, to become full-time devotees. And then Prabhupada says, of course, the devotee is always very liberal-minded and tolerant towards everyone, seeing everyone as the part and parcel of Krishna and the pure devotee of Krishna, only seeing that due to Maya, they have temporarily forgotten their real position. So a devotee is always very understanding if there is some discrepancy behavior on the part of non-devotees, and even some devotees misbehave. He is always very tolerant and understanding. The point is that no one is actually qualified in this material world to approach Krishna. But if he makes the attempt through our inducing him gradually to give his energy to Krishna, by that attempt, Krishna will extend his mercy and deliver the fallen soul despite his so many disqualifications. And such person or aspiring devotee, he is to be considered the most exalted of men, because he has given his life to Krishna. Prabhupada's statement. So, this is Prabhupada's liberality of how we should look at others. Although there are many statements how a devotee should look when he sees others mistreating a devotee. He quoted Narottam Das Thakur of becoming angry when he sees others being offended by others. But Srila Bhakti Siddhanta says, Saraswati Thakur says, but towards himself, he is always accepting of it. But when he points it out when he's intolerant of offenses committed to others. But still, he does it in a compassionate way. In a compassionate way. Compassionate way means free from envy. That's a compassionate way. Free from envy. Not wanting to see the person suffer for the sake of suffering. Not wanting to see the person being given a bad name for the sake of being seen as superior. Not wanting to see the person, you know, in any way, you know, having to be the object of envy. Therefore, a devotee, even though he's not freed from envy, if he continues to glorify pure devotional service and tries to instruct others in a way which is free from envy, free from hatred, free from jealousy, then he should try to point out and help others to see that what they've done is not appropriate because they have caused harm to others. That's how a devotee thinks. Towards himself, he should be like Dharma the bull. Of course, that's a very high position. Sometimes I even heard devotees say to me, even very senior devotees say to me, that's too high, Maharaj. I can accept it's too high. But what can I say? Prabhupada set the bar, we should at least glorify that it exists, even though we're not there. And we should still aspire for it, even though we're not capable of immediately practicing it. If we just simply set it aside as too high, then we'll always fall into other excuses as how to deal with becoming tolerant with offenses towards ourselves or somebody causing pain towards ourselves. And we suffer. We suffer. We suffer. So that's my answer. I'm going to end here. I'm going to end here. I ask your forgiveness, please, for... I'm asking for forgiveness and I'm not going to continue anymore, even though it's more questions. That's why I'm asking for forgiveness. So I'm going to end here. I don't know what you do. I don't know what this forum does. And I don't know what you're supposed to do when I leave, but I'm going to take your leave and humbly offer.
Maharaj will say a concluding word or two.
Oh. As long as he doesn't say anything that I don't deserve to hear, because I know I'm just simply trying to keep Prabhupada. Prabhupada is center of attention.
That's exactly why we asked you to speak. That's exactly the point of this whole program. I really hope that this program is going to leave a deep impression in all the participants of this program. And I'm sure, completely sure, that your talk and your participation deepened the samskaras which are already there. That's the whole idea of this thing, just to somehow or other keep Srila Prabhupada alive and to give the talk on this topic. So it's very appropriate. We can even, you know, take your talk and make it as an introductory talk to the whole educational program of Bhaktivedanta University, because that's exactly the whole point of what we have. So thank you very much. It was very emotionally moving.
And I would say awakening for me personally, and I'm sure for many others as well. Thank you for this wake-up call, Maharaj.
Thank you, Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj, for asking me to be your servant by taking part, even though it was
a
big sacrifice and it was a big surrender, and even my mind was resisting 5 minutes before turning on the camera, but because you asked me, I couldn't resist. So, thank you for allowing me to.
I promise to you not to misuse it.
Looking forward to your association. Hare Krishna.
Yeah, I'll see you very soon, hopefully.
Jai. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Glory to Prabhupada.